Greetings. I've already greeted you, but thank you so much for who you are to me and who you are in me. And I saw my sister teasing her hair one time. She wasn't going like, nah, 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 nah. She was like doing it, you know, with a comb to make it bigger. Some of y'all know all about that. And then you put the Aquanet in it, and then you go to the Pentecostal church. But I walked in the bathroom on her, and she was turned backwards to the mirror with another mirror looking at the back of her head in that mirror. And I was 16 years old. I'd never seen such as that before. And I thought, what in the world is this? And of course, she screamed at me for walking in on her. But then I said, what are you doing? And she says, I'm looking at the back of my hair so I can get it just right. She had to put it in the shape of a football like Sarah's and then spray it down real good so it wouldn't go anywhere, like Marge Simpson. You know how those hairdos go. But I thought, well, isn't that the greatest thing that ever happened? So when she left the bathroom, I went in there and carefully locked the door, and I picked up that mirror, and I stood there, and for the first time in my life, I saw the back of my head. And it was not good, because I'd never combed it before. I had longer hair then, and I didn't even realize it, but I had dreadlocks in the back. It looked like a chow dog's butt, right here in the back. And the front was all slick and combed, and then the side was shag. I was a mess. But I never had thought to look at the back of my hair, but I stood there with a great revelation. I said, I'm looking at a part of my body I've never seen before. I could even aim the mirror down and see other parts I'd never seen before. And I'm so excited at this conference to see parts of my body that I've never seen before. See, all that was to make a point. Some of y'all I've never seen before, but you're as much a part of me as the ones I've seen for years and years, like Gary. And it's just a wonderful discovery to see parts of your body that you've never seen before, even if they're ugly. Oh, I want to make a disclaimer. I'm only responsible for what I say, not for what you hear. No, that's that. Y'all need to hear that. I am only responsible for what I say, not for what you hear. I can't help what you hear. I'm going to say what I say, but you're going to hear what you hear. Because of your filters and your mindset and what you already think, some of y'all have preconditioned your heart to enjoy my message. And I could say anything in the world and you would enjoy it because you love me and you just have an expectation and you're ready to roll and you know we're going to have a good time, whatever we do. And some of you, I don't think there's anybody in this room that's preconditioned themselves not to enjoy my message. There are those in the world who would do such and have done such. Don't you just hate it, Gary, to be at one of those churches and preaching where you've got a deacon or a preacher sitting behind you doing this to, you know, so the crowd can read him, or somebody on the front row and you got all the body language going on and they're nodding, or shaking their head no when you're saying something. It's hard to preach in the face of that. And it's wonderful to be able to share in a group that's just pulling it out of you. And it's like, y'all are a bunch of sponges today and we're going to soak up stuff together, but I'm not responsible for what I say. I mean, I am responsible for what I say, but I'm not responsible for what you hear. You never see anything, of course, you know, as it is. You only see things as you are. And, you know, proof of that's the Bible. Every time you read the Bible, you read it as you are, not as it is. And that's what people say, man, that book's alive. That book changes, or that plant changes. Dean Dozier's the first one I ever heard quote. I don't even know who made the quote originally, but no man steps into the same river twice. Because you change and the river changes. But you see things as you are. And I've got friends right now that believe that we're living in perilous times, that things are so dark and they're so scared for the future. And I happen to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that we're living in the greatest day that there's ever been. This is not because Jesus is fixing to come to the eastern sky. That's not why. We're living in the greatest day ever because it's the only day ever. And it's great because I know it's great because my filter that I've got in my mind is a great filter and I placed it there myself. So I'm not going to see anything but greatness this day. It's a great day to be alive. I'm thrilled to be here today. I love what's happening in my world today because I'm looking at it. This is my world. And it's beautiful. There's no wars. There's no rumors of war. There's no famine. There's a feast in the kitchen. There's a beast at the feast, but there's a feast. There's a feast. No names called at the feast. Have y'all ever been to Sonny's Barbecue and had one of their plates? You can get fish, pork, and chicken all on the same plate. There's me, Mike, and Gary. If you don't like one of us, you might like the other two. If you don't like both of us, might like the other one. But you get a good, I love the balance here. And I love what we're serving up. And Gary used my word a few minutes ago to talk about his ministry being a bridge. And that's what we actually named our ministry. And I see these three ministries in such the same light, yet different lights because of our ability to speak to different people. I can go sit down and have a conversation with any religious person in the world because I know their book. And I can meet them where they are, and I can agree to a point and then gently ease them into the truth of the lie they're believing or whatever doctrine they're pushing or whatnot. So I appreciate all the different perspectives. And I love, Mike, I love the challenge that you bring to my life. Every time you speak, I just sit and shake my head. I'm not saying, I'm saying, dear God, why haven't I seen that before? And the same with the first time I heard a CD of Gary, I had to park the car. Todd Hunter, I think, is who gave me the first CD that I ever had from you. And I was driving back from Alabama and listening to it. And I had to pull the car over in the emergency lane and figure out how to rewind that CD. I was in a borrowed car and they didn't have a cassette. So I was trying to figure out how to rewind a CD. So I had to start it over. And that was good too. But I wanted to hear it again to make sure that I heard what he had said, because it changed, just began to bust off my life. I was still in religion. And I was in the right one. My religion was right and everybody else's was wrong. You know, we was kingdom people. We weren't those ignorant charismatics anymore. We'd moved way beyond charismania and we was those smart kingdom people. But he said some things that began to break the kingdom chains off of me, because he had one foot in the kingdom and one foot in outer space or somewhere. And as I listened to that, and I thought, what, is he really saying that? And Gary, I'm with you. I always had trouble with accepting myself. You can't love anybody else if you don't love you. You can go through the motions of it. You can't, you know, and the ultimate realization that you are everybody else is when this thing really becomes real. That's next level. But if you're down here on the level I'm on, you might still be working on loving others. Well, that's never going to work until you love you and until you accept you. And you are a soul that has a spirit that lives in a body, and it's all perfect. And I know you want to exercise it and change it and get it to lose some weight and cut off some tumors and add on some stuff and take off some stuff. And you're perfect exactly as you are today in this moment right now. And if you accept that and are able to love yourself that way, you can immediately love everybody else that way, up to and including your enemies, the worst ones. If they're attacking you at this moment, all you can have for them is love if you've made peace with you. And everybody you have a problem with, you're just having a problem with yourself. Everybody you have an argument against is just because they're saying something that's in your heart or being something that you're capable also of being, because they're you. There's parts of my body I have disagreements with. There's parts of my body that I'd rather look a different way or be a little different. I wish my 8-pack was a 12-pack. I love a church where you can lie and nobody cares. I wish my 2-pack was a 6-pack. Can we say that? Okay, I wish my keg was a 6-pack. But it's still my body and it's still perfect. And as long as I'm wishing for it to be something else, I'm not at peace with it. As long as you're trying to change your situation, then you're not at peace with it. And if you're choosing not to have peace, that's on you. But you know who's going to pay for it? Everybody around you. You've made a decision not to be at peace with something, and it's going to cause turmoil in your life, and it's going to cost you, but it's going to cost everybody you're in relationship with. Just make peace with things as they are and understand what Mike said last night. We could have just went home. You said it right. He said those magic 4 words. Who remembers the magic? It could be 5 words if you take off the apostrophe S. But the 4 magic words, who remembers what they are, what Mike told us last night? Everything's in order. That's one way to say it. Anybody else got a take on it? There's nothing out of order. All is well. Everything's perfect. It's all meant to be. You can, what?
I said I don't have a mic because it was blowing away last night.
Exactly. We heard some good stuff last night. Spontaneous life is living through me. You'll quit trying to live a better life when you understand that you don't have a life to live. But there's a spontaneous life taking place in your midst. Yep. You get to be a cell in this thing. You get to be, I was thinking the other day about, well, I actually saw a billboard coming up here that said, "We shall be changed in a moment in the twinkling of an eye." And it had a Hollywood Jesus in a white dress flying through the sky being chased by a bunch of church ladies up through the air. So I guess that's a dream of that preacher. He'd like to be chased by a bunch of church ladies, I guess, and wear a dress. I thought, I know whatever pastor put that up, he's a secret drag queen that wants to be chased by other drag queens. Because it looked like drag queen Jesus, and he was flying off through the sky. But the verse on the sign said, "We shall be changed in a moment in the twinkling of an eye." And just the least tad bit of understanding, if you ever even looked up a word in the Greek, shows you that we shall be changed in. That word moment is never anywhere else in the New Testament, and it's atomos in the Greek. Atoms, that's where we get the word atoms. And we shall be changed in our atoms. And Gary mentioned the DNA changing. I'm not the same person I was yesterday. I'm not the same person I was for sure last year when we were up here in August or in the fall. We're being changed in our DNA in a moment, in an atomos. We're being changed in our atoms on the inside of us. Does that mean the renewing of the body so that it never dies? Don't know, don't care. I'm not my body. My body is irrelevant in this thing. It's like wearing a suit. I don't care if I wear the suit forever or if I take it off and put on a dress. It makes no difference to me. It's not who I am. You're not what you're wearing. That body's just what you're wearing. Love what you're wearing. Accept what you're wearing today, but don't worship it. And don't believe it's you, because it's not you, and you know that. Judgment comes from our history, we learned last night. And if I could get that in my head, I still find myself sitting in the seat of the scornful and standing in judgment over myself. And the reflection of that is that I do it in other people's lives. I'll find myself judging somebody, and the minute I do, I have to reflect that, because that is me, that's somebody I'm judging, and I have to understand that it's because there's an area that I'm still judging myself harshly in and for, and I've not let go of that. So quit judging yourself. Quit being so hard on yourself, and you won't be so mean to everybody else. Sarah. There's no such thing as passing time. That's good to know when you're the preacher and you've got the microphone. I use acronyms a lot, like USA stands for United States of America. I mean, if you don't know what an acronym is, it's the first letter of each word of a statement or a sentence. And I love this one. Nothing's out of order. You know what the acronym is for it? No. N-O-O-O. Nothing's out of order. No.
Wow, that's good.
So I like that. I made a note of that last night. It's the first time I'd seen that. Part of my, I have a kind of an OCD thing, and I write songs. I write several songs a day. I write songs to my dogs when I'm feeding them, because it's in me to make things rhyme and to write songs. It worked out real well in the charismatic movement. I was one of those rhyming prophets. You know, it was beautiful. It was perfect. But I was doing it in school. When I was in school, the teacher would be teaching us a lesson, and I would take what she was saying and put it in rhyme and say it back to myself in my head so I could get what she was saying. It was a way I remembered stuff. And a way, there's a divine order inside me that wants to make things fit or rhyme. It's not exactly OCD. Like, I've not counted the logs in this room. Robbie can tell you how many logs are in the room when he gets here and how many boards are in the floor probably and how many cans are in the cabinet. If the beans aren't with the corn, oh, Lord. So I don't have it bad as some people. I hope I'm not judging. But I like for things to be structured and ordered, now, especially words. I want words to fit, and I want to understand things. So I won't ever forget nothing's out of order, because no, nothing's out of order. And you won't either now. You'll remember that. Nothing's out of order. No. N-O-O-O. Nothing's out of order. I wrote you a poem on the toilet this morning. I don't guess I had to tell you it was on the toilet, did I? I'm sorry, Sarah. Sarah told me to clean up my act. I'm not allowed to mention body parts. I'm not allowed to... Was I allowed to mention toilet? Everybody uses a toilet. Okay. The poem has nothing to do with the toilet. I am a toddler learning to talk and walk. My head is too small for my crown. The words I choose may not be the best. When I walk, I might just fall down. If you should choose to judge this man, you'll sure have plenty to do. But if you will look for the treasure in me, my jewels will come shining through. Yeah. Man, I'm sure you could search around and find a fault in me if you wanted to. But if you'll just take the time to look, my adopted granddaddy, hey, my adopted granddaddy always said, "Eat the watermelon, spit out the seed," is a good way to say it. So if you get any seed in my message today, you just spit that out because it's going to be plenty of watermelon. I brought a gift for all of y'all, and we're not going to open it till tomorrow. I wrapped it up, and I brought this gift, and I'll give you a hint, and it's something that I've been having my gut's been dealing with me about my life. So I've got MY is my, and then LIFE. So this is my life, and I'm going to share with y'all some things about my life and some things that have happened to me in the last 6 months that have helped me, some things that have been revealed to me that have helped me to get my life in order. Now, I can't sell you a tape series that tells you to run and do those same things to get your life in order. Boy, they've made millions off of that. Hey, Buster. They've made millions off of that because they would hear a word of one of these big boys. They would hear some kind of word. Hey, buddy. And it would work for them because their spirit revealed to them what they needed to do to find results. So then they packaged it and said, for $29.95, do these 6 steps and you'll get the same results. No, not true. All that got them was the new Mercedes. But the tape series should say, I listened to my spirit and found out these steps. If you'll listen to the spirit within you, you can find out your steps. Because, and I'm going to tell you what happened to me, but it's going to be a clue and you can use it kind of as a roadmap. You'll go down different roads and make different stops and whatnot. But we're going to share a couple things about that in just a little bit. But I've wrapping a gift. This one's not wrapped. It's actually wrapped in a box instead of paper because I wanted to write on it. And I didn't want it to bleed through onto my box. But I was thinking as Robbie was wrapping this, I didn't do it. I made him do it for me. I was thinking about the different ways that people wrap gifts and what it reveals about them. And this is not the way Robbie would wrap a gift normally. He's one of those people that when he wraps a gift, he creases the paper along the edge of each side of the box so that it doesn't just round itself around an edge. It's got a sharp crease on it. And then the sides, it's almost undetectable where the little V comes down because he makes it match the pattern of whatever is in. I mean, you just wouldn't believe it. And the tape is invisible, and it's like the box is like there's no way to actually break into it. It's like been dipped in something is what it looks like. And then the bows are exactly the same centimeters from the end, and I mean the ribbons, and then the bow. Anyway, you get it. There's those kind of people. And I don't know if you're one of those kind of people. That's the meticulous, every fold creased, bow ribbon, color coordinated. You get it. Then there's the ones that wrap it, but they have uneven leftover triangles, and the bow's optional, and it might be slapped in the corner or in the middle or where, you know. No. Then there's the gift bag people, the ones that use tissue paper. It says I'm lazy, but I still care a little bit. You know, I'm not going to go through the motions of wrapping your present. I'm going to stick it in the bag and just put some paper around it. So there's those kind. Then there's the gift bag people that just throw it in the bag with no tissue paper. The size isn't coordinated with the gift. I mean, it could be a bag this tall with a yo-yo in it. There's those kind of people. Then there's the bag might say happy birthday and it's Christmas. Then there's the people like me, the Walmart bag wrappers that, you know, if I'm getting real fancy, I'll put it in 2 Walmart bags so you can't actually see what the gift is. And I'll tie the top into a bow, which I can do that for. And then there's the sorry people who just use 1 Walmart bag or a Meijer bag and stick the gift in it and just hand it to you. So there's different kinds of people that wrap things different ways. Which one is that?
The sorry people don't give you a gift.
Is there anybody else in here who's that meticulous, crease the edge kind of person? Anybody like that? I don't know many people like that, like that would get upset if the pattern didn't match. Anybody else like that? Well, I don't know anybody like that either. How many of y'all are Walmart bag people? You just throw it in a bag and tie a knot and hand it over. Are y'all mostly the gift bag people? With tissue? Without tissue? I'm just trying to see who I'm talking to here today. Vive la différence. Long live the difference. Isn't it great that we all do it differently? Isn't it great that we all say it differently?
I'm a Walmart person, but I put it in a Saks Fifth Avenue bag.
Whoa! Now, see, that says a lot, doesn't it? Now, I get made fun of at home because I buy generic creamer, the Walmart brand, but I pour it into my carnation can. My nice, expensive carnation vanilla creamer. Well, I've got one from like 1978, and I keep buying the Best Buy, Best Value, whatever it is, and then I pour it in that one. So why do I do that? I want people that drink it to think I bought the expensive brand. Is that pride or ego? Or I may have found a place I need to be crucified right there. I don't know. I pull off the discount stickers before I let somebody know I paid a lower price for something. That's, I'm confessing my sin. Y'all confess yours. This is where somebody's going to stand up and tell about a murder they committed, and I'm going to wish I hadn't said it. Okay. So we know there's different kinds of people in the room, and I think that's a good thing. I have a quote here from Oliver Wendell Holmes. Too many of us go to our grave with our music still inside. Part of my mission this week and my calling is to help some of you sing the song that you've been afraid to sing. I'm talking to people, and I'm talking to people right now who are watching on our link that have never lived out loud the life that they know they're supposed to be living. They've never sang the song that's in their heart. They've never danced the dance because they've been afraid to, because of what religion has taught them, because of what their family might think, because of what their friends might think. Buster Snoops, don't you try to steal my thunder. Come here. And I'm going to help you sing your song. I've been counseling for over 30 years. Never helped anybody, but I kept counseling anyway. I got some interesting material for my country songs. I'm sorry that distracts me, but it does. Get a quiet toy, Buster. I don't want the people that I've counseled with, you can't believe how many of them said, I don't want to hurt or disappoint God. I don't want to disappoint my parents. I don't love her. I don't want to be married to her. She'd be better off without me, but I just don't want to hurt the kids. I just don't want to hurt God. I just don't want to hurt her. I just don't want to hurt my family. I just don't want to go against what the Lord says. And I could fill in that blank with 1,000 different examples. I would quit my job, or I would come out sexually, or I would, you fill in the blank yourself, but I just can't because of blank, because of what somebody's going to think, because of what somebody's going to, how somebody's going to judge me. And I want to help people break through with what I'm going to say about my life today and tomorrow. I want to help some people break through and be. And get comfortable with and be okay with being. And be all right with being who you are. Be okay with doing what it is that you know you have to do. Because it's going to be all right. It is. So there's a word for somebody. Now, listen to this. Moses got way off course in his, of course, from his original calling, started writing laws that made no sense to anybody and a lot of other silly stuff. But his original calling was to set his people free. Let my people go, was the message. Let my people go. And every one of us, we have a call to help people like us break free from similar bondages. Whatever bondage that's in your life, there's 100 people in your life with the same bondage. And we're all one people. So let my people go. That's all of you. That's any of you that are in bondage to anything. Anything that's stopping you from being. Anything that's stopping you from being the life and allowing the spontaneous life to flow out of you. Anything. We're going to figure out how to set it aside this week so you can be. And so you can flourish. I got a job one time. I've had 1,000 jobs so far. I hated all of them, including preaching for a living. But I got a job one time at a warehouse, a material warehouse. And they were paying minimum wage, so it didn't, you know, I took the job. I always had to supplement my ministerial career because I was never that good a preacher, as Sarah will tell you. Go figure. But I went to this material warehouse, and the guy took me out there. He said, all right, here's your job. He said, and he picked up a bolt of material, and he said, there's 10,000 bolts of material out there, and they all look like this. And he said, so here, your job is to unroll these bolts of material. This takes an education. If you've got to go to Georgia Tech for this stuff. He said, and then start over at the beginning And as you roll it, he said, when it starts getting off, straighten it up, get it back to the edges, work out the creases, and he says, and just re-roll these bolts of fabric. That was my job. He said, do as many as you can. There was 10,000 of them. He said, do it. And the good part is, while I was doing it, customers were unrolling them behind me. So it was like an endless job that never ended. You had, because by the end of the day, he wanted, once I got the job done, which took a few weeks, then he wanted them to all stay like that. So by the end of every day, I was walking behind customers, snatching it out of their hand. You don't want to look at that. And then sitting it back down and, you know, elbowing old ladies in the head and, you know. But it's when you're rolling these things up, if you'll notice, it's slightly out of line right here. Not even a centimeter, one of those millimeter things. Just barely out, but the more we roll, the worse it's going to get. It's going to come off the roll down here. So you have to get that thing back in line. And your lives are like this somewhat. And there's some of you that look like this thing when I picked it up. And I'm not here to tell you how to fix your lives, but I want to tell you that it's intended by creation for you to live in peace and for you to have joy and for you to like waking up in the morning, for you to pop open your eyes and be excited to have spontaneous life moving through you again this day. That's what it's intended to be like. And sometimes if you're not rolled up just right, some of you got everything you need, you just rolled wrong. I want to help you re-roll. Can we say that? We can be holy rollers this week if y'all want to. I'm a holy roller, re-roller, holy re-rollers. Oh, that sounds almost sound like tongues, Gary. You got an interpretation? See me tie my bow tie. I am a holy re-roller. So I've re-rolled this thing now, and this was what my job was at the material factory. I was reminded of it recently when I bought carpet for the house, and I went and I got a good deal on the carpet, but I had to go out and cut it myself and roll it myself and load it myself and all that. So that was fine with me. I got a great deal on it. But as I was rolling that carpet, it kept getting off. And if it gets off, the more you roll, the worse it is. Don't ignore it. That little thing that's nagging you in your life that you know, you're keeping on pouring your energy into some dumb, misrolled roll because you don't have the nerve to roll it back and fix it. I'm just going to encourage you to fix it this week. I'm not trying to change your life. It's perfect like it is. But I'm telling you, in my life, I went back and re-rolled a few things in relationships and that kind of thing. And boy, has it made a difference. I can even, Robbie, be proud. I can even line up the patterns. Look at that. Almost. So that's just a picture. I taught children's church for years, and they were way smarter than most of y'all. But having an illustration sometimes helps to be able to look at something, to remember something. I'm a visual learner. I've never read an instruction in my life. I just think I know how to do everything. But if you show me how to do something, I can do it from then on. If you tell me how to do something, I may get it and I may not get it. Are we good on all this? I'm going to pull this out since I'm sitting down. I was reading the story of Sisyphus this week in Greek mythology. Is anybody familiar with the story of Sisyphus? Sisyphus was the king of Corinth, and he was a wicked, mean, old, just horrible. He would rob people and murder them and kill them, and he had a reputation in Corinth of just being just a bad, bad guy. And he betrayed Zeus, and Zeus, which is where a lot of you get your idea of who God is from Greek mythology, Zeus, a big, strong, lightning bolt throwing god on a throne in the sky. A lot of folks believe that's who God is. From Greek mythology, you don't realize you do, but you do. But Zeus was on the outs with Sisyphus, so he sends Thanatos, which is the spirit of death, to deal with him, to kill him, basically. Well, Sisyphus out-wrestles the spirit of death, Thanatos, and chains him up. So now in the Greek mythology, in this story, death is now chained up. So people couldn't die. Nobody could die. So older people were getting older and older, and there were sick people that wanted to die and couldn't die. Nobody could die. So Zeus corrects this thing by turning up the heat on Sisyphus to the point that he himself wanted to die. And he's the one that had chained up death. So when it got so bad for him, he said, please, I'll unchain death because I want death. I just want to die. So he unchained death so people were able to die again. You're thinking, what a silly story. Really read the Bible if you want some silly stories. He unchained death, so death was free to roam around and people could die again. But his punishment was not to die, but to roll a giant boulder to the top of a hill and get it almost to the top and never quite get there. Then it would roll back to the bottom and he'd have to start over. And then he would roll the boulder. Look this up sometime and read the story of Sisyphus. He'd roll it all the way back up to the top of the hill. It took all of his might. And when he'd get it almost to the top of the hill, it would roll back to the bottom again. And he was cursed to do that throughout eternity. That's what most people's lives are like that I know. Because of their mentality, because they don't know who they are. They don't know who God is or isn't. They've not figured out anything about oneness. They don't know about time and space and how we live in a place that's beyond it. They don't understand the nothing principle that we discussed last night. They don't get, no, nothing's out of order. They don't get that. And if you don't get that, life can be a series of pushing boulders up hills that roll back down. Does anybody wake up frustrated in the morning because you've got to push the boulder back up the hill again, knowing that you're going to almost make it and it's going to roll back to the bottom? I'm speaking to you today and this week because I lived like that for a long, long time, even way after I met Jesus, way after I became enlightened. I still had many, many days where I felt like I was rolling boulders up hills. I don't do that anymore. I'm with Gary. I have peace that passes understanding, beyond understanding. We're talking about some things that you won't understand this week. Don't have to. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I used to be a great preacher that had three-point sermons, and each of the 3 points had two sub-points, and I had notes on it that I could hand out before the services, and it was wonderful. And I had all my little illustrations, and it was like I was in a kayak with a laminated map. And I knew where I was going with this thing. And I even would write in the margin of my Bible, tears. If I could work up some tears right here. Or I would write, I'd write in the margin. Girl, I can cry on demand. If anybody wants to see me, I can do it. But I was looking through one of my old Bibles recently. I've got Bibles from 1990 when I started preaching or pastoring the church. I've got them every year. I got a new Bible and it has all my sermons in it. To me, they're very valuable. Well, they're worthless, actually. But I was looking at one recently. I was looking down through the margin. It said tears, laugh, point to someone. I mean, I had this thing down to where it was like a stage production, and it was good. I mean, it was really good. But now I'm not in my kayak with a laminated map anymore, with a sure destination headed somewhere that I know. Now I'm on one of those $2.99 floats that you get at the gas station at Panama City, and you get out past the waves and somewhere over the sandbar before the big ones are breaking and before the little ones are breaking, you're just kind of floating in there, and you close your eyes and you drift. Have I done something to offend you, Buster Snoops? I may as well just invite Wesley Joe to service. This is what she does to me. She walks around and she thinks, what can I do to be loud in front of Daddy's preaching? look, he's drinking now. He's got a dose of key beer in front of me drinking. Come on.
He's your Sisyphus.
He's my Sisyphus. He's the son I never had. So I'm in that place right now to where I don't know where I'm going, but I don't care. You know how it is when you're at that place and you're laying on that float and you think, I've probably floated 100 yards past my motel, but I'm not going to open my eyes. I'll be laying there in that little spot right in the ocean when you're right in between the two wave breaks. And you're thinking, I'm probably surrounded by sharks, but I'm not going to look and see. I'm probably so far out the lifeguard can't see me, but I'm just going to keep my eyes closed and enjoy the sun. That's where I am in my theology right now and in my life right now. I'm just floating. And I'm having a big time. I had a bumper sticker years ago that said, let go and let God. And I was thinking about that. I've sold that car long ago and I let them have the bumper sticker with it. But I was thinking if I'd kept it, let go and let God, at some point I could cut off the God part and just say, let go and let. And then as I advanced in my theology, I could cut that thing again with a razor blade and I could just say, let go. And then I could cut it one more time and it would say, let. So I'm kind of in the let stage right now. Just let. Not let go because I don't have anything to let go of. Not let go and let God because there is no God that's going to grab hold of anything I let go of. I'm not even sure if I have the ability to let. Maybe that's beyond my understanding. Thinking I have the ability to let or not let. To be or not be, that's the question. To let or not let. I'm just going to float and see what happens. So my life, I believe that every single day that we have a tree of life in the center of our garden and that we ought to eat at it and that we ought not to eat at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Whatever you think is bad in your life, whatever you think is good in your life, it's all from the wrong tree. All that will do is give you diarrhea. That's some bad fruit. And if you want to live there, you're living in religion and you're living at the seat of judgment and you're doing yourself a great harm. The purpose of life is to enjoy your life. Your divine calling is to enjoy your life. If you have things in your life that are stopping you from enjoying it, then you know maybe you should let go of some of those things. We hold on so tightly to things because we're supposed to, or because they'll think bad if we don't, or because, you know, one of the greatest things that ever happened to me is I lost my church. A church that I didn't really want. Oh, I had 400 or 500 people in attendance every Sunday. We took up $10,000 a week. I had a $2 million piece of property completely paid for, and I was the shazazz. I mean, I was like a movie star at that church. I made good money and had fun doing it, but I hated it. And some folks say, that's the worst thing ever happened to that man. Nope. One of the best things that ever happened to me. You know what? One of the other best things ever happened to me? I lost a marriage I'd been in for 25 years. Was it hard? It's hard to be in the marriage. Did people think bad of me? I didn't leave. You know, technically, she left, but I drove her to it because I didn't want to be married. Did people judge me for that? Sure. I judged myself for it more harshly than they did. Looking back, am I glad it happened? I can't even tell you. It was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. I couldn't even be myself in that marriage. And you know what the strange thing is? She's happier than she's ever been. She was under my control. I was a control freak. I thought I was God. We was part of that old school doctrine, Gary, where the women had to submit. I don't believe all that mess anymore. Women, if somebody tells you to submit, pop them in the cheek. Just back, hit them once or twice and say, submit that. Because that's a bunch of BS. But I was part of that school where the women had to submit and the kids had to submit and the elders had to submit. And if you were in my church, you had to submit to the elders. We had that old doctrine going where I was the shepherd and the people were just dumb animals. It was great. I was a shepherd and the elders were sheepdogs. They couldn't be a human like me, but they could be sheepdogs, which was above the sheep at least. And they got to advance and be sheepdogs. And then the people, they were all just stupid sheep. And all we needed them for was to shear them so we could keep building bigger buildings and paying higher paychecks. And it wasn't that crude, but that's basically the mentality. It's what I grew up, you know, in a shepherdship church. It's what they thought. And I carried that on over into my free church, but it wasn't all that free. My poor wife was forced to submit to me. And I was nice. I didn't have a lot of demands. But she knew that she was second fiddle and always would be. And guess what? Now she's the head of the house. She makes decisions. She goes where she wants to go and does it when she wants to do it and don't have to have anybody's permission. We're friends now, and I ask her, we're not best friends, but we're friends. We have our 16th grandchild coming soon. And so we have to talk occasionally. We see each other at holidays and whatnot. And I said, why don't you get married? She said, phew, I don't want to be married. Why would I want to be married and have somebody telling me what to do? Or having to look at somebody's drawers laying in my floor or, you know, smell somebody's farts in my bed. Why would I want to give up this wonderful, beautiful freedom? She said, you know, marriage was fine for a season, but she says, I'm happier now than I've ever been. That was such music to my ears because I thought I'd hurt her and this and that. She's over there rejoicing. It's like she finally got the old mangy dog taken to the pound kind of a thing, you know. I wanted her to be a little miserable, but she was kind of hurt my feelings. But she was actually, and see, if I went for a long time, I thought this is so wrong, you know, because I probably could have fixed it at any point that I wanted to go fix it, but I just didn't go fix it. I didn't go sit down with counselors and try to reason out why we should keep this thing going because we had a lot of equity in years. You know, years of equity in a ministry or in a relationship or on a job, that's worth exactly zero. That means nothing to the people who understand time and space. And, you know, and if you're having your 50th wedding anniversary, congratulations, and that's beautiful. And if you're having your 5-minute anniversary, it's the same. Congratulations, and that's beautiful. And I'm not trying to get y'all all to run get divorced today, but I'm telling you, you can't place your worth in that. You can't base your peace on that. You can't tie your self-worth to those things. Whether you made it or didn't make it in those arenas doesn't say who you are and who you're not. You have to get that through your head. Your divine purpose in life is to enjoy your life. If you hate your job, quit it. I'd be irresponsible. It's irresponsible to stay on a job you hate for so long. What would I do? I don't know or care. Get rid of your house and live in a camper. Enjoy yourself. This thing goes by fast, y'all. I was a teenager yesterday, and I've got 16 grandkids. I don't know. This ride's going fast, and I can't figure out how to stop it. So I'll be damned if I'm going to quit, if I'm going to lock myself into something I don't enjoy. I'm just not going to do that anymore. If I don't want to sit on a pew, I'm not going to. If I'm stuck in a committee that I don't want to be on, I'm quitting it. If I'm stuck in relationships that aren't fruitful to me, I mean, I know you have to make a little sacrifice every now and then and give a little bit and this and that. But if it's an ongoing thing to where you just can't stand it, well, darling, just free yourself up from it. If you hate your neighborhood, move. If you hate payments, then get rid of everything you've got a payment on and you won't have any. If you can't sell it, give it away, burn it, destroy it, take it to the dump, run your car in a lake, let them repossess it. I don't mess up my credit. You don't need credit. It's what messed you up to start with. Get rid of all of it. Move in with somebody. Surely you got somebody. If not, live in a shelter. You won't have no payments. I mean, if that's what's bothering you so bad, your payments, get rid of them. I'll show you how to get rid of payments. I did. I went to a car lot and looked at new cars a few weeks ago. And the guy said, let's fill out an application. I said, I don't have any credit. He said, everybody's got credit. I said, I hadn't had any in 10 years. He said, how do you live with no credit? I said, I hadn't made a payment on anything in 10 years. He said, how do you do that? I said, you just don't care. You don't care what you drive, and you don't care where you live, and you don't care. I said, now, meanwhile, I've lived on mattresses in Sunday school rooms, and I've, you know, driven cars with 200 and some thousand miles on them on most occasions, and I've worn this. Y'all can testify I wear the same shirt every time you see me. I got two black shirts, and I alternate between the two of them. But I bet I don't have a Belk's payment the first of the month. You know, I guarantee you that. Jesus said, I'm the life, the truth, and the way. I was thinking about that statement the other day. That's another billboard we saw coming up here. I am the life, the truth, and the way. No man comes to the Father but by me. The Father principle, as Gary said earlier, the source, the Father, the universe, spirit, you know, you fill in the blank. But I'm the way, the truth, and the life. That doesn't mean Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. That means he came to a revelation I am the way, the truth, and the life. Now you have to come to that revelation so that you can say, not about Jesus, but about yourself, I am the way, the truth, and the life. That's when that becomes real to you. That's when that relationship with the source is enriched and you begin to see the source as a parent, not as a mean being that's trying to knock you in line, punish you if you mess up. That's when you begin to see the oneness, like a father and a son, or a father and a daughter, or a mother and daughter. You begin to see that kind of relationship when you begin to see that you are the way, the truth, and the life. When you can personalize that and say what Jesus said. Life is not an experience that happens between birth and death. Life is who we are. And the spontaneous life that's taking place every minute I feel like I've tried to describe this process just for my own benefit and for others. It feels like every day I'm emptying out and filling up again. Like every day I'm willingly pouring out everything I know in the morning so that I can be filled again with what I haven't yet known. Yeah. or with what I haven't yet seen. And I'm finding that that's a real important process to be in field, is to empty out. You know, the hardest part of learning is unlearning. The hardest part of receiving new revelation is dumping your old revelation. Because your hard drive is already full of a bunch of cow manure. And if you're not willing to get rid of it, but what will they think? You've already lost it right there. What will anybody think? What if you're not willing to dump that hard drive and free up some space, then we're not going to be able to download anything good in you. Let go of what you believed yesterday. Dump it out. More will come. Today. So my life, I've been thinking about my life. And first of all, the very obvious, there's my M and my Y on both sides of this box, children. This is my children's church illustration. So we've got my life here. And first of all, you can't even see the M and the Y when this thing is where it's supposed to be. It's about life. It's not about me and it's not about you. It's never about me and it's never about you. It's first of all, me, it's who you're not. You're not your body. A lot of folks think they're their body. People say, well, I'm old. Well, not unless you're your body, because you don't have an age. People say, well, I'm old. I'm too young. I'm too old. I'm nearly dead. There is no death unless you're talking about your body. And if you think you're your body, then you're so confused. When you start thinking you're your body, you're going to be in a heap of trouble, because they're not built to last. They corrode. They fall apart at different times. You can replace parts occasionally. We watched a special on TV last night of the man who had the first hand transplant. Anybody see that? It was on Nat Geo last night, I think is where it was. We watched it in the hotel room. Most amazing thing, this man got gangrene in his hand and they had to amputate. But when they did, they saved all of his nerve endings and everything, folded them back under there and just, you know, put it inside the stump. When they had a donor hand, they opened back up and they had to wire all those nerves together. And it's not like green to green, black to black, yellow to yellow. There are no colors. There's like just a handful of nerves and tendons and all these things. And they had to figure out which one went where, or otherwise the wrong finger would move. But they got them all wired together and hooked that thing back up. And I think it was 2 days later, was his wife's birthday. And for a birthday present, he gave her this. About that much movement. Wow. And now this joker's playing tennis with that hand. Grabbing the tennis ball and throwing it up in the air and hitting it. He can't do everything he could do, but he had a hand transplant. So there's some parts that can be, but even that took a lot of surgeries, a lot of money and a lot of time. So the body in and of itself, if you think that's you, even with medical science and all these wonderful medicines and oils and stuff that we keep going to try to keep us living another day, you're not your body. Me, I'm not a body. I'm not singular. I'm not my doctrine. I'm not my past, for sure. I'm not God. Some folks think we're God. No, I don't want to be God. I have no desire to be God, as Dean Dozier says. Thank you anyway. I'm not what other people think about me. Do you know that I don't know any of you? You're me, and I'm you. But all that I know about y'all is the role that I've given you to play in my life. I'm the star of my show. Y'all are just secondary characters. All y'all are co-stars in the Robert Show. And I have assigned each one of you a role and a character to play that's probably nothing like the real you. You know how you think you know somebody and you've got a certain opinion of them, and then you spend the day with them and realize they're nothing like you thought they were? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you had her pegged all wrong. She's not that at all. She's something good. Everybody in your world's like that pretty much. Mm-hmm. They're just who you've decided they are in your carnal mind. Because if you got down to it, you do know them because they're you. And all these other roles that you've given them are just, they're just costumes that you've dressed them up in. You've become divided, and instead of me being one person in this room, there's 40 of me, or however many this is, and I've given all y'all other 39 different roles and costumes, and some of you are women and some of you are men. Some of you are gay and some of you are straight, and some of you are fat and some of you are skinny, and some of you are dumb and some of you are smart, and some of you, well, I don't know any dumb ones really. But some of you are religious and some aren't religious, and some of you drink and some of you don't, and some of you smoke and some of you don't, and some of you cuss and some of you don't, and some of you fart and all of you fart. And there's, at some time, but see, all these are these roles that I've given you. That's not who you are. And you might think you know who I am, but you really don't unless you see you in me and you know you. If we could get this thing down to the bare bones and get rid of all the costumes, ourselves, our own costumes and others, then we could finally see in truth that there's only one anyway. So me is nothing. I've got this poem I wrote about me, not Robert Rutherford, but me. I am light, I am love, I'm beneath, I'm above. I am peace, I am whole, I'm a spirit and a soul. I am beautiful, I am free, I am everyone I see. The beginning and the end, I'm a lover and a friend. I'm a master and a savior, I'm a blessing to my neighbors. I'm the truth, the life and way, I'm the night and I'm the day. I'm a lion, I'm a lamb, I am hope, I am, I'm the mountains and the sea. I see the universe in me. I'm the sun and moon and stars. That's who I am. That's who you are. We are everything. It's true. But that truth will hit the wall when you see this higher truth. We are nothing at all. We're everything and we're nothing. I can't even understand that. I don't know why I wrote it.
It's good.
Makes no sense at all. That's when you know you're on the right path around here. When you read your own poem and think, what the hell was I thinking? And everybody says amen. It's like, well, I got that right. Okay. It's lunchtime. So there's me and there's you, and neither one of us are relevant. It's only life. It's only life. See, you can't even see the me and the you part of this thing. The you is just, you is just another divine manifestation of me. I told somebody yesterday, I said, you know what that is right there? I told Sarah, when I said, you know what this is right there? That's where my responsibility ends. It's all you after that. But you, as far as it goes, right there, the end of my fingernails, as far as my responsibility goes, I don't want to control anything past that. I don't want to change anything past that or actually anything within that. See, I've got to revise that. Me and you are irrelevant in this mix. Spontaneous life is happening. I'm going to close with, we didn't get to my LIFE, but we're going to. But I want to close with this. Something that happened, I was at Mom and Dad Schaffner's for 3 glorious days. I wouldn't have picked any cruise I've ever been on over being at their house. I've never been so loved and so fed, so well fed, and just, I don't feel at home hardly anywhere. I've never felt at home on this earth. I used to sit on my front porch when I was a kid thinking, I wish my parents would come back and get me away from these kidnappers that kidnap me. Because I know these people cannot possibly be kin to me in this house. They don't get me. They don't look like me. They don't talk like me. It's like I'm speaking a different language from them. And I'd sit on the porch thinking, please come back and get me wherever I came from. Because I just never quite related to my family. And which later on, I figured out a lot of reasons why. So I don't feel at home. I never felt at home. But I feel at home in my little house that I have built now. And I felt so at home. Rex and Liz, thank you. Mom and Dad, thank you for that so much for those days. While we were there, we were walking around in the yard, me and my 2 angels that I have been given. And Wesley Joe found a conch shell somewhere outside. I don't know. You've got one sitting outside on a wall over by the apple tree somewhere, I think. Or somewhere there's a conch shell sitting out there that you probably picked up at the beach. And when she picked it up, she looked at me and she said, let's listen to the ocean. I started crying when she said that because my mama taught me how to listen to the ocean when I was a little kid by putting it up to your ear. And if you listen real close, you can hear some sort of echo of the traffic down there. Anyway, but it sounds like the ocean. I swear it does. If you want it to. If you don't want it to, it doesn't. So she said, let's listen to the ocean. And I could hear my mama's voice in her because we're all the same. Living or dead, gone or here, male or female. We're all just one anyway. So I heard my mama say, let's listen to the ocean. So she took that little shell and she put it up to her ear. And she said to me, why do we hear the ocean? Why do we hear the ocean in this shell? Why do we, Daddy? Why do we hear the ocean in this shell? And if we'll listen to our questions and the questions of children and each other's questions, we'll learn something. But if we'll listen to the answers, you know more than you think you do. And when she said that, I didn't know the answer in my brain, but straight from my heart, I said, we hear the ocean in the shell because the shell came from the ocean. And that made perfect sense to her. And it makes perfect sense to me. That whatever we came out of is in us. Wherever we came from is on the inside of us. It's part of us. Whatever bigger than us that is unseen is also on the inside of us. Whatever something or someone is in us because we came out of it to begin with. And the spirit of oneness, I don't know, just in that moment of time as I explained that to her, I had some sort of revelation that we all came out of the same thing, which makes us all part of the same thing. And if you'll listen, if you'll put your ear up to any heart in this room, you'll hear love. Because we all came out of it. Just like that shell came out of the ocean, and if you listen to it, you can hear the ocean. We all came out of love. And if you can look past the political differences and the doctrinal differences and the sexual differences and the whatever else differences, and put your ear right up to each heart, just like a conch shell, you'll hear the heartbeat.
Everybody's
heart. Heartbeat's the same. Everybody's heartbeat. Same. Some of them are irregular. Everybody. Some are faster. Some are slower. Some are louder. Some are quieter. But it's all the heartbeat of love. And it says, I am spontaneous life and I'm happening now in you. I am spontaneous life and I'm happening now in you. I am love and I'm here on the inside. I'm happening now in you. I am love and spontaneous life and I'm happening right now in you. Let us rejoice.